At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
This is The Run Line, VSiN's premier baseball betting show. With Adam Burke, here's Ben Wilson.
Thanks, Brent Musburger. We're back here on The Run Line, hour number two of the show. We bring it to you every Sunday night, 8 to 10 Eastern, alongside Adam Burke, who you can follow at Skating Tripods, our VSiN MLB daily writer. You can catch his work at vsin.com. I'm Ben Wilson. Jason Connor, outstanding job as always, is our producer behind the glass. Still to come this hour, we've got Real or Fake. We'll talk in a few minutes here some of the top trade deadline candidates who will potentially be on the move within the next 7, 8, 9 days here. Trade deadline coming up there on August the 2nd. We'll also preview the full MLB Monday card and a bunch of big pitching matchups on the card for tomorrow. Right now, though, Adam, let's update Sunday Night Baseball. There's not been much to report on. It's still a nothing-nothing game. All first five unders are a cash for you there as it's zip-zip, but you've noticed something pretty peculiar there on Carlos Carrasco, the starting pitcher tonight for the Mets. Even though he's not giving up any runs, he's scattered six hits, and there appear to be some somewhat concerning signs as well on the deep dive data that you've been looking at.
Yeah, only one strikeout through five innings for Carrasco tonight, so the stuff not particularly lively, and that's always a concern for me coming off of an extended layoff. Now, maybe he was just a little bit rusty. Maybe he just didn't really have it mechanically today, and that's a possibility. These are things that you want to file away because, you know, I try to look for a lot of these injury indicators, and Carrasco, who we know had the back issue earlier on in the year, fastball velocity down almost a full mile per hour, The slider down 2 miles per hour from his season average here today. Spin rates look okay, but I do look at velocity and spin rate to sort of see where these guys are at from a health standpoint, where they're at mechanically. And Carrasco able to work around those six hits tonight, but the stuff just didn't really seem to have a whole lot of life to it.
It's interesting for a guy like Carrasco. This was his first start looking at it, Adam, in 10 days, and it's so far been like 11 consecutive shutout innings. Went into Wrigley Field, was able to scatter five hits in six innings there, did strike out six, had much better command in that game. But so far today, only lasts the five innings before being pulled, as the Mets have already gone to the bullpen. As it is a base hit here in the top of the sixth inning for San Diego. So it's just interesting how, as we talk about, the variance can go both ways. And I know you looked at Carlos Carrasco as a guy who you expected positive variance. I mean, here's a guy who sits with an ERA well over four on the season. But at the same time, some of the other numbers, the expected ERA under four, fielding independent pitching, and xFIP each right around 350. But in a vacuum, though, it's pretty obvious where what you're saying, that you can still find ways to get lucky, even if the numbers kind of suggest something else and you've been unlucky, because that's certainly been the case there tonight. Not the point being, it's not exactly echoed or totally mirrored what we would have expected coming out of the second half here for Carrasco.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you know, maybe it's just something mild. Maybe it's just kind of a reporting issue. Maybe something's wrong with the gun. You never know. I always look back the next day and see how, you know, Baseball Savant and the StatCast data has been updated. But with that being said, I mean, you know, Max Scherzer's looked great coming back. Jacob DeGrom made that rehab start a couple days ago. Chris Bassett's looked really good. I mean, this is the one area of the team where the Mets can withstand some sort of injury, obviously, as we've seen. I mean, they've been without Tyler McGill for a while, too. But it is just something to kind of file away, something that I look at. I'll wait and see how Carrasco looks in his next start. I guess, basically, in a long-winded way, what I'm saying is if I see a velocity drop or a spin rate drop, I'm not betting on that guy in his next start. I'll wait and see if it was just an anomaly or if it was maybe the start of a growing trend.
Good point you make. I'm seeing, as far as the actual in-game line right now, again, Mets have gone to the bullpen here, -$1.30 live, Padres -105, 3.5 with heavy juice to the under right now, seeing about -150. Drew Smith they have brought in. He gives up a one-out base hit, but does then get a fly ball out. So pretty good situation, or at least position right now for Drew Smith. As far as where the Mets will go this week and where we might see Carrasco next, it would probably be, because they have both Monday and Thursday off, just have that Subway Series against the Yankees at Citi Field Tuesday, Wednesday. Probably going to see him this weekend in Miami. For those of you who are wondering, well, where does Carrasco start? That is your answer. Adam, as far as some of these other – yeah, go for it.
Now that winds up being, you know, one start in the span of 15 or 16 days. So you wonder how sharp he'll be in his next outing. And, again, that's very important to keep an eye on here coming out of the All-Star break. I talked about the White Sox, right? They're off Monday and Thursday. So they're going to have guys that – have made one start in the last 14, 15, 16 days. You know, when you're a creature of habit like these guys are and they love their routines, it's definitely something that you want to factor into your handicapping process.
Looks like Sunday would probably be the start as well for Castillo. So you're talking about, you go from a 10-day rest, as you mentioned, Adam, to another 6-day rest, essentially, because of the off days there for the New York Mets. There are a couple, though, pitchers who have looked very, very good this year who have been pitching for teams much worse than the New York Mets, who we kind of assume are going to be on the move. Wanted to go pitcher by pitcher, case by case, Adam, try to figure out which guys are you, A, high on, and B, which of these guys would you like to see in a particular situation as we come closer here to the trade deadline. First guy I'd look at is Luis Castillo, who did not start the year for Cincinnati, was coming off injury, got off to somewhat of a slow start, worked him slowly back in from his rehab. Has made 13 starts, though, at this point, and it's like a 2.77 ERA, fielding independent, pitching of right around 3 in his 13 starts with the Reds, throwing 78 innings. All the reports we're getting is that he is going to be moved before August 2nd. I'd imagine he's a guy that you are fairly high on, given how the velocity's been pretty consistent for him, coming off the injury at around 97 miles an hour, and the fact that he could certainly be a useful arm for a number of contenders here down the stretch.
Yeah, I think the important thing, and I'm pulling this up right now, is that it's not just a rental for Luis Castillo. You've got him for next year as well. So that increases a couple of things. One, I think it should increase a team's willingness to trade for him. But two, it increases the Reds' willingness to trade him, because this is not a team that's competing for the playoffs next year. Without question, they are building for 3, 4, 5 years down the line. And you can maximize your return when you can move a guy like that. For me, I think the best fit of the contenders would be the Minnesota Twins. And I'm going to say that about Frankie Montas, too. So I'm just throwing that out there right now.
Okay.
But when you look at this Twins team, they don't get innings from anybody. They don't get any length from their starting pitchers. And part of that is by design, because Rocco Baldelli is a big believer in the third time through the order penalty. But the other part of it is they just don't have guys that can work deep into games. I mean, this is Joe Ryan's rookie year. Chris Archer doesn't work deep into games anymore. You know, they're missing a workhorse type guy in Kenta Maeda. Getting a Luis Castillo, who's got a high strikeout rate, a high ground ball rate, can work deep into games, that is obviously beneficial to their rotation, but especially beneficial to their bullpen, which is the greatest concern I have for them, just because they've been overworked and overused all season long. I think Castillo's best fit would be with the Twins. And I also think that he will get moved here, because the Reds will want to maximize on the value of that extra year of control.
It's why I started with him, because if there is one of these pitchers we're going to talk about, he would seem the most likely, probably right up there as well with Frankie Montas, who we'll go to right now. We saw Montas, he was limited, came off the IL, only pitched 3 innings, was on a pitch count, but did look pretty sharp. I think it was, 5 strikeouts pretty much right out of the chute there for Montas in that 3-inning start earlier against the Tigers as part of that doubleheader last week. 18 starts for Montas this year. He's thrown about 100 innings, 3.16 on the ERA. The expected ERA, FIP, XFIP, all right in the vicinity of his true 3.16 number there on the earned run average. Around a league average, 2 on the batting average on balls in play at 2.80. So guy who's been pretty true, at least, with the numbers so far. Where it's almost in a weird way, Adam, I'm kind of surprised he hasn't been moved yet, because we saw how the A's moved Sean Manaea a week before the start of the season to San Diego, and it kind of just seemed like, well, Montas has to be the next domino to fall. Interesting that he hasn't gone yet, but I'm sure you would still believe that he's got to be on the move, given everything that Oakland has made it clear about and the direction that franchise has been going.
Yeah, I mean, I think he gets moved, certainly, and I think he's not the only A. I would assume Ramon Laureano gets dealt, and probably Sean Murphy, too. I don't really know if they have anybody in the bullpen that's worth moving right now, but – this is a team that's very much open for business in a lot of different ways. And Montas is another guy, as I look here, you know, he's arbitration eligible next year as well. So it's another situation, much like Luis Castillo, where you're not just getting 2 months, you're getting a year in 2 months. And that really means a lot. Now, Montas is coming back from injury, only threw 3 innings in his last start. So we'll have to see if he gets stretched out a little bit more in his next outing. But the Twins are a fit. You know, I mentioned that already as spoiler alert kind of thing. But yeah, the Twins, they need starting pitchers with talent that can work deep into games. I think the Cardinals are another team that really needs to be aggressively looking for some starting pitching. And I don't know if the Cardinals will deal within the division for Castillo, but I think Montas makes a lot of sense there as a ground ball guy with a really good defensive third baseman and Nolan Arenado, pretty good defensive team as a whole. The Cardinals are a good fit for Montas. So that would be my kind of projection. I think maybe Castillo to the Twins, Montas to the Cardinals. I don't think any team would turn down getting an arm of that caliber with either one of those guys, but I think those are probably the two best fits.
No doubt. At least from the bullpen's perspective, I'd have to think, even though Lou Trevino, the numbers have just the raw numbers have been very bad, ERA over 6 this year. Guys saved 30 games combined over the past 2 seasons. He has a 470 batting average on balls in play. One of the more unlucky pitchers in all of baseball. I've always liked him as a back-end reliever. I'd have to think he's got to find a place somewhere, wouldn't you think, Adam, in one of these teams, somewhere as maybe a seventh-inning guy at one of these bullpens of a contender could actually use?
Yeah, I think so, especially because a guy like Trevino, he's actually a Super 2 guy, so there's 2 more years of arbitration eligibility after this season. So a team's going to look at his upside and say, okay, he's not pitching well, but we can fix him. You know, there's something that we can fix here. Maybe it's just, you know, being shuffled around on a bad team in that bad A's bullpen, stuff like that. But as I said, I mean, Ramon Laureano, that's a rental player, but I expect him to be moved. They're a team that, you know, they're, again, we talk about the situation with that the Reds are in. The A's are not going to be better than any of the 4 teams in their division anytime soon. So if they can get a high return on anybody at the MLB level, they might as well do it.
A's who, if you're handicapping who's going to finish with the worst record in baseball this year, I think the A's have to be a pretty significant minus money favorite at this point. 35-63, 357 winning percentage this year. There's a couple other names I want to throw at you, Adam, when we return here, because Shohei Ohtani, his name has started to get thrown around in some of the trade buzz, which is just fascinating considering he is your prohibitive AL MVP favorite right now. The first two-way player we have truly seen at the major league level since Babe Ruth. And could he possibly be on the move? We'll get Adam's thoughts on that next. Plus, a big update in New York. The Haas strikes for San Diego. Big double to open the scoring for the Padres. We'll update the live line on that game. And the panic on the Mets. It's been a brutal hitting week offensively all weekend for New York. We'll discuss all those things on the other side here on The Run Line.
Found VSiN's premier baseball betting show. This is The Run Line.
How about Eric Hosmer with a big RBI double, making it a 1-0 lead for the San Diego Padres as we welcome you back, updating Sunday Night Baseball here on The Run Line. But
at Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Joe Musgrove, right as we were about to say, Adam Burke, time to panic on this Mets offense. 2 runs through this entire series, at least through their first, if you look at it, 23 innings at the plate. And now all of a sudden, Starling Marte, base hit, Francisco Lindor double, and they're in business here. Second and third, nobody out, bottom of the sixth, down 1-0, a position where if the Mets lose, they're only a half game ahead of Atlanta in the NLE standings right now. And especially 2 for New York facing a big Subway Series this week against the Yankees. on their home turf. But how about Lindor, who's, it's funny, for as much of the potential negative regression as you've talked about, Adam, the Mets offense coming back to earth, Lindor's the one guy who you actually, if you look at the numbers, you kind of expect him to be better in the second half based on a lot of the hard contact rates in the BABIP for him this year.
Yeah, you know, Lindor's a guy that I think people really generally overvalue his offensive profile, having seen him for a long time in Cleveland. He had some years where he was really, really good, had the I think it was a 34 homer season for Cleveland. He had a little bit of pop, but you know, he's a guy that's just, he's a high floor player because he's a great defensive player, a smart base runner. But the offense is typically about, you know, 15 or so percent above league average. Not to besmirch that, I mean, that's great, but I think people kind of overvalue his offensive profile. But one thing I want to mention real quick here, as this game is going along, Joe Musgrove's spin rates seem to be declining. So I'm following along with this on Baseball Savant via the StatCast data. And Musgrove is down across the board, except for his sinker. He's only thrown three of those in terms of spin rate. And they've been getting progressively lower in the middle innings here. So I don't know if he's tiring. I don't know if he's pitching through something. Velocity still looks okay. But the spin rates are down compared to league average. And it seems like he's kind of wearing down for one reason or another here in the middle innings.
He's only at, I mean, 78 pitches right now. But yeah, leaving him in for now, again, as we talked about, it's hard to really quantify, too, what you're going to get out of a lot of these pitchers in their first starts out of the break. We discussed it with Carlos Carrasco. Pretty significant velocity drop today with the fastball down a solid a mile an hour across the board, whereas Musgrove was basically untouchable for the first five innings. And now all of a sudden, as you talk about, Adam, this is, what, third time through the order here, it's started to get a little sticky. Now fans on their feet, second and third, nobody out. Pete Alonso at the plate as well, therefore the Mets. And yes, I get what you're saying on Lindor as well. At the same time, I mean, hard hit percentage in the 40% range, barrel percentage around 9%. But yes, is the ceiling there more all-encompassing because of the defense? Would totally say so. And a guy who's WRC plus, you know, right around 114 right now for Lindor. But yeah, when you're the shortstop for the Mets and they spent what they spent to get him after the great years he put up in Cleveland, you can understand, right, why a guy like that would then tend to be overvalued, even though, like, for the in the numbers community, what you're looking at, those things haven't really changed year over year if you really break it down from Cleveland, especially into the last season when things did start to tail off a little bit in that 2020 campaign. Uh-oh, Alonso, by the way, Adam. That ball is gone. Three-run homer, Pete Alonso. Yeah, I don't know if you're able to get a live bet in while you were watching the Joe Musgrove velocity or spin rates all of a sudden just drop out of the sky, but three-run bomb, like that. Wow.
Well, January 1st will be the day that betting starts in the state of Ohio. And in fact, right. I was downtown today catching up with a friend, and I saw that they're going to put a Caesars Sportsbook in the basketball arena where the Cavaliers play, Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. So there'll be a Caesars Sportsbook now. You know, when I come back in future years.
Okay. Look at you being an honest man, realizing you're unable to make a live wager right now. I get it, Adam. Way to be honest. Wow, but a three-run homer for Pete Alonso. 3-1. I'm seeing what that has done to the live number. Mets now pretty giant in-game favorites. I'm seeing them up to minus 1,100, plus 650 on the Padres. 6.5 now your live total. Juiced under minus 125. Remember, that game closed 8 with a lot of juice under there. So, yeah, maybe sweat time if you had an under, as we're about to get into both bullpens, I would think. 22 now, go-ahead RBI as well, Adam, for Pete Alonso. That leads all of Major League Baseball. So you talk about how timely hitting can be difficult to quantify as well, and it's something that can have ebbs and flows within a particular season. For whatever reason, though, Alonso has been able to come up with the clutch hit time and again, and he does it once more here in this one tonight.
A big blow, and you know, look, I mean, these are games that the Mets need to win. You know, when you get, and Carrasco wasn't super sharp, but I mean, gave you five innings and no runs. I mean, you know, again, the offensive profile for this Mets team is relatively low based on their contact quality, but you can't be squandering games when you give up 1, 2, 3 runs, something like that. So to get a big blow here in the sixth, to set it up now to the point where you can use Edwin Diaz for, you know, at least three of the remaining nine outs that the Padres have. It's a very timely blast, to say the least.
Timely indeed there for one Pete Alonso. As far as some of these other, there are a couple other trade deadline candidates I want to throw out there, Adam. We're going to move on to our real or fake segment up next, and then we'll have our full MLB Monday card to break down before we get out of here and wrap up the show tonight. But for a couple other names I want to throw out at you, let's start with Shohei Ohtani, who I'm sure people will hear that name and just say, all right, there's no way. Like, come on. This guy is the best, most valuable player in baseball. and will be as long as he is healthy and active and both being serving as both a hitter and a pitcher. But we've seen that the Angels, like, they are fielding calls from teams. It sounds like they are essentially going to stand pat here. They are going to at least, you know, they are going to wait and figure things out at the end of the year. What say you, though, on what the Angels should do with Ohtani? I don't think this is really going to become a story as far as them actually moving him. Would be a stunner to actually see that happen in the next 8-9 days. But where do you stand on what the Angels' long-term philosophy should actually be, a team that sits 16 games under 500, not even close to competing there in the American League?
Well, I mean, I think the Angels are handling this in a very smart way. You keep saying publicly that you're not going to trade him, but you continue to field calls as if, you know, if you get blown away by an offer, you will move him. Now, look, Ohtani is arbitration eligible for the third time next year. So he signed a 2-year extension that took away his first 2 years of ARB. Now he's got one more year of team control. So he's not an impending free agent. He will be playing under contract next year for the Angels if they keep him. Now, look, they're not going to be better than the Astros next year, and they're not going to be better than the Mariners next year unless something dramatically changes. So for me, I move Ohtani. And, you know, I don't have to answer to ownership. I don't have to answer to fans. I don't have to answer to season ticket holders. So it's easy for me to sit here and say this. But this is a pathetic farm system, and it's been a pathetic farm system for a long time. They're very lucky they got a generational talent in Mike Trout, because who knows where this team would have been otherwise. The idea of trading away Ohtani in a year where he'll help you win 75 games next season, probably, if that, the idea of trading him away to get talent into your system should be very attractive to Perry Minasian. I don't think it happens, but I would be listening to every single offer, trying to maximize every offer that comes across my desk. And if I can fleece somebody for Ohtani, mm-hmm. I'm pulling the trigger. I'm doing it.
And it, just the fact that we're having this conversation alone, though, does that not tell you everything about what is wrong with the Angels as an organization? The fact that they've allowed it to get to this point, not even that it's at this point, Adam, but that it's gotten to this point so early that it's, you know, it's an all-star or it's a trade deadline conversation in the year 2022. And as you pointed out, you would have, I mean, even the most cynical Angels fan, I'm sure, would have thought, well, at the very least, we won't have to have this conversation until probably this time next year when he is playing for a contract and goes toward that arbitration date. That, to me, is the most kind of stunning thing of all this, that they've mangled things so poorly. And despite getting really a brilliant pitching performance from him all season as well, with a sub-3 ERA and a guy who's really found some new life as a pitcher, where I think he's probably even more valuable this year than he was last year because of the improvements pitching-wise. That, to me, is the bigger story here, that the Angels as a franchise have found themselves in a position where here we sit on July 24th of a 2022 season and are already now having this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You know, but also, you look at Ohtani and you look at how dejected and just frustrated Mike Trout is on a daily basis. And you sit there and you go, well, Ohtani's not signing here. Like, he's not sticking around. And, you know, I mean, do you allocate, I mean, you already allocated over $400 million to Mike Trout. Do you allocate a number in the similar range to Shohei Ohtani? Probably not, because they've come to find out that having a couple of mega contracts and trying to plug holes with a bunch of scrubs doesn't really work. So I think it'll be mutual for both sides to kind of go in their separate directions here. So if you're the Angels, why not trade him?
Yeah, I mean, I get it.
You have to inject some kind of talent into that prospect pool, because it's been so long since you've had any.
Yep. I'll throw out one name at you real quick as well here, Adam. Andrew Benintendi. Sounds like the Yankees have moved in. They are likely now at least front runners to get him, the all-star there for Kansas City, former Boston Red Sox. Do you think that ends up getting done, even though we've seen a couple teams come out and say they would not want to trade for him or other members of those Royals because they weren't vaxxed with all the games still to come there north of the border in Toronto where they would be ineligible?
Yeah, that's certainly a tough thing for the Yankees. And especially, you know, look, I mean, there's a very realistic possibility that the Blue Jays win their wild card series and you have to play a 7-game playoff in Toronto. And you wouldn't have Benintendi for 3 of those 7 games if it went that far. So to me, I feel like Benintendi would be a smarter and easier fit in the National League. But, you know, if the Yankees want him, you know, I mean, maybe it's something that they're not too worried about.
Look, it's a situation where, hey, Yankees, they say we want him, and they're now the front runner. So, like, yeah, you say, I guess they're going to get him, but that's an interesting case because we've seen other teams in the AL East say, yeah, like, we're just crossing him off our list right away because of how important those series with Toronto will be. I don't know. Remains to be seen. very interesting next week and a couple of days until August 2nd. That's a trade deadline coming up. But up next, we'll talk real or fake. Two very curious pitcher names Adam has cooked up for us on this week's edition. We'll discuss those two guys next, right here on The Run Line.
You find VSiN's Premier Baseball Betting Show. This is The Run Line.
Ice cold beers, cold hard cash. Join the action on the pitch with the Heineken 2022 Soccer Prediction Challenge. Compete in 20 free-to-play pools this season for your shot at a share of $100,000 in total cash prizes. Head to DraftKings.com/Heineken now to start your run at victory. Heineken, beer made better. 21 and over only. Terms and conditions and other eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Drink responsibly. It is the final half hour of The Run Line from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Ben Wilson back at our Circus Sportsbook studios in Las Vegas. Adam Burke joins us from Cleveland, Ohio, where we get into one of our favorite segments we like to discuss every single week, Adam. It's real or fake. Couple of intriguing names you've got on the list this week. Let's start with the guy on the West Coast, Cole Irvin of the Oakland A's. We just had the conversation of which A's could potentially be on the move. Irvin is not one of those guys that came up. Well, let's do the deep dive, though, here. What have you noticed on the numbers behind the lefty there by the bay in Oakland with Cole Irvin?
Yeah, so Cole Irvin, I mean, last year in 32 starts, covering 178 innings, and you don't see that kind of durability much in Major League Baseball anymore. 424 ERA, 492 expected ERA, 430 FIP. This season, 308 ERA with a 450 expected ERA, 379 FIP, and 102 and a third innings over 17 starts. And when you dig deeper into Cole Irvin, what you see is that he's been outstanding at home and not outstanding on the road. But he's been so good at home that his full season numbers that I talked about, 308 ERA, 379 FIP, those are excellent numbers. But this is a guy that really pitches to that ballpark. Oakland Coliseum is, as the name implies, a very closed-in stadium. The ball does not carry at all. A lot of teams just don't really like playing there. Nobody feels all that comfortable there. You know, the locker rooms aren't great and so on and so forth. So teams tend to go to Oakland and struggle. And Oakland starting pitchers definitely do much better at home between the conditions and just sort of, you know, a certain level of confidence because they know that they can give up hard contact and it's not really going anywhere. So for Cole Irvin, it's very simple. And this is hard to do because the A's are such a big dog in just about every game that they play. But if you want to bet on Cole Irvin, you do it at home and you don't do it on the road. So you look for maybe overs, team total overs. The A's are actually pretty good against lefties on the road. So maybe you look for an over and Irvin starts there. But this is exclusively because he's been so good at home. And it's hard to see a reason that doesn't continue because it's just a great pitcher's park.
And you look at what the A's have in front of them this week. Irvin looks like he will take the ball at home against Houston on Wednesday. So that presents a very interesting dynamic where you have a very good lineup hitting team in Houston. But again, he does get the home park factors. You wonder, too, it's wild how you see some, this sometimes happens just kind of by randomness, where a pitcher starts his career at in a total bandbox like Philadelphia, which Irvin did. If you look at the 2019-20 seasons, he only threw about, it was right in the 45 innings range, but and only made three starts. So they used him mostly as a reliever coming in. But an ERA of over six in that time in Philadelphia, ends up going to Oakland last year, and you laid out all the numbers there. It's one of those things where everything you bring up, it's almost furthered by the fact, and I know the pitchers, especially when they're young and are pretty pliable as far as their overall mechanics and their sort of and their pitch selection in general and the arsenal that they bring, I get that those can all change very rapidly and you can see pitchers change very dynamically over a year or two. But when you look at the way Irvin struggled so much out of the gates in a place like Philadelphia, which is a tough place to get your feet wet as a major league pitcher, it kind of makes sense, right, that this has been the thing happening to him. And is that, I would imagine, a reason why when you look at some of these trade targets for Oakland, I don't know, how high are other teams on Irvin actually who are going to be contenders who would really want to look at him? I'm just not sure that there's going to be all that much interest in the market, even though the numbers are certainly at least average to above average from what we've seen with him so far.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't think so. I mean, look, you know, this is a guy at home. He's allowing a 219 weighted on base average and on the road, a 350 weighted on base average. So essentially, you know, when he's pitching at home, everybody's Leury Garcia from the White Sox. But when he's pitching on the road, everybody's Kyle Tucker from the Astros in terms of comparing the weighted on base averages to an individual player's numbers from this season. 163 ERA at home, 479 ERA on the road. And these are things that teams have to weigh with extreme pitchers' parks, You know, guys that play at Coors Field, maybe starters in the NL West that have had bad starts at Coors but have been good everywhere else. These are all things that they're obviously looking for and trying to understand and ascertain. But, you know, for Cole Irvin, you talk about facing Houston. I mean, look, Houston's a great lineup. This could be a spot where he kind of gets knocked around a little bit. But he's allowed 11 home runs this year, all of them on the road in 47 innings, 55 and a third at home, no home runs, and only 7 extra base hits total. So he's just been really, really good at home, and maybe he's a live dog here against Houston this week.
That'll be a very interesting series to watch, especially if Houston wins the first game of that series and comes in. Let's see, that is looks like Wednesday when he lines up. So if, let's say they win the first two games of the series and you would all of a sudden have Houston riding a 7-game winning streak fresh out of the All-Star break, that would end up being a really, really interesting line there in that Wednesday start for Irvin. I want to get a quick update in as well for Sunday Night Baseball because this will lead into the second pitcher in Real or Fake we will discuss, Adam. That's the New York Mets who end up getting a 5 spot there in the bottom of the 6th. Luis Guillorme with an RBI single after Daniel Vogelbach had gotten on right after the Pete Alonso 3-run jack, and then Tomas Nito with an RBI double as well. So this all of a sudden has gotten a little dicey if you had the full game under. 8 juiced to under about minus 115, 120. 6 runs alone just in the 6th inning. 5-1 there. Mets going to the 7th here against the Padres. Both teams now into the bullpens. Looks like it'll be Seth Lugo coming on here for the New York Mets. But one of those pitchers you're going to be looking at in Real or Fake is Taijuan Walker, the man who will start the Mets' next outing. That will be Tuesday at home against the New York Yankees. What are you looking at with Walker here as we assess his value on this whole idea of Real or Fake?
Well, I guess, first of all, we could put the final nail in the coffin of the Joe Musgrove 25-1 Cy Young ticket that I have. That was on life support to begin with, but you know, not a good look. Oh, wow. And again, those spin rates declining throughout the game. Definitely not a good look for him. So Taijuan Walker this season is really interesting. In 16 starts over 91 and two-thirds, 255 ERA, 360 expected ERA, 297 FIP. The left on base percentage is a little bit high. It's up around 78% for a guy that has a well below average strikeout percentage. But the most intriguing thing for Taijuan Walker this season, 2020, albeit only in 11 starts, 53 and a third, a 13.1% home run to fly ball percentage. In 2021, over 159 innings, a 14.3% home run per fly ball percentage. In 2022, in his 16 starts, 5.1%. So Taijuan Walker, he's got almost a 50% ground ball rate this year. He's only given up, what is that, 2 or 3 home runs, or 4 home runs in 91 and two-thirds. Just keeping the ball in the park, keeping the ball on the ground, and it's really made a significant change to his numbers here. I initially looked at this and thought, okay, this is probably not sustainable. Low strikeout rate, high left on base percentage, so on and so forth. But the guy's made some clear changes to keep the ball on the ground, stay off the barrel a little bit more. And those are really important things for a pitcher. His barrel rate's down 3.3% from where it was the previous year. There's some degree of sustainability to this. I don't think he's this good, but I think that he can continue to be an above-average starting pitcher.
And this is the first time since 2018, Adam, he's had a hard hit percentage on the batted, if you look at the batted ball numbers, below 30%, down in the 28-29% range. At the same time, it's funny how we've seen this as emerged. I don't know how much of a trend this really is, but we've seen select pitchers, Adam, have this happen this year where you're seeing them give up a lot fewer cases of barreled balls or hard hit balls, and you're seeing those numbers really improve, while at the same time reducing the strikeouts, where Taijuan Walker, he's striking out a career low number amount of guys, only a shade over 7 strikeouts per 9 this year. Have you found, as you've looked into a number of these guys, he's not the only one who's doing this, is there a correlation to be had here of guys who are maybe getting away from relying so much on the strikeout and just trying to more pound the zone, get the weak contact, and live in that regard, where, as you mentioned, it's nearly 50% ground ball rate. If you're doing that and you're limiting hard contact, naturally you don't necessarily need the strikeouts to pump yourself up in your numbers as a result.
Well, this is kind of a corollary to signing a guy like Francisco Lindor, you know, because he's such an elite defensive shortstop that as a starting pitcher, you look at things and you say, you know what, I don't have to strike everybody out. I can give up balls in play, but I'm going to keep them on the ground. And so for Taijuan Walker, yeah, the strikeout percentage is down 2.2% from last year, but the walk rate's also down 1.5%. So he's just pitching to contact. He's pitching to more ground ball contact. And that's a recipe for success with this Mets team. So, you know, if you're a guy in the Giants, for example, you know, if I'm Logan Webb, I'm sitting there going, man, I got to strike out like 7 or 8 guys a night because my defense isn't going to help me at all. You know, or if I'm a guy for the Cardinals, I go, man, I got Nolan Arenado at third base. I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to strike everybody out. I don't need a 25% K percentage. I can let him hit it and play. So it's just kind of, you know, it's sort of dependent on the defense that you have. Now, with that being said, and this will open up a brand new discussion for us to talk about later on in the season here. If the shift goes away, or at least the reported changes to the shift, all of a sudden this becomes dicier because Taijuan Walker's hard hit percentage is over 40% for the first time since 2018, but it's all on the ground, which is fine when guys can shift. When guys can't shift, then hard contact on the ground becomes more detrimental. So that's what will be really interesting to sort of isolate for future seasons are these guys that are allowing harder contact, pitching to more contact, but it's on the ground.
Adam Berg, already looking ahead to 2023. Just classic. We talked about this with Ohtani. He's already got one foot ahead. I mean, it's really more like, you know, a fourth arm ahead, Adam, because you're doing so many things at once. But that's a good point. I'll mark that down as something we'll circle back to at some point. Maybe, I don't know, maybe not like next week, but we start getting toward the end of the year. That's a really interesting topic to discuss. As far as the immediate, we got to break down tomorrow's card. We're going to do that next as we wrap up the show. Monday, Major League Baseball card next.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
You found VSiN's premier baseball betting show. This is The Run Line.
The VSiN College Football Guide is out now, and the Pro Football Guide is coming soon. There's no better way to prepare for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Reserve your copy of the Football Betting Guide today and get access to everything we offer for the entire football season with a VSiN All Access subscription. Make this football season your best ever. Subscribe now at VSiN.com/subscribe. Last segment for us here on The Run Line. We've got Greg Peterson and the look ahead coming up right after this. Big thanks to Jason Kahn, our producer behind the glass, Andrew Ingold, technical director, everybody else helping out behind the scenes. For now, though, Adam, let's take a look at the Monday Major League Baseball card. At least for the two teams here playing in Sunday Night Baseball, Mets are off tomorrow before a two-game set against the Yankees. Padres do have an interesting spot, at least, where they go to Detroit. But as far as the whole trying to fade a team coming off Sunday Night Baseball, it's not exactly the most palatable option. With Sean Manaea, who is the strong lefty going for San Diego, I'm seeing overnight about $1.55 to $1.60 favorite on the road in Detroit. I'm not sure if that's one of those scenarios you'd be looking at or if it's just going to be a pass for you there to start the Monday card.
No, that's not a very attractive looking game. Unless the Padres are able to come back in this one and maybe force extra innings, something like that. They're probably halfway to the tarmac for their flight at this point.
Basically, Drew Hutchinson goes there for the Tigers tomorrow. Probably, at least to me, the most intriguing pitching matchup is that series in Philadelphia where we saw the Phils get swept by the Cubs this weekend. Braves take 2 of 3 in their series against the Angels. You get Max Fried and Ranger Suarez, a couple of lefties battle it out. Fried has been excellent all year, 5 quality starts in his last 6 outings. His first appearance, though, since July the 16th, so as we were talking about earlier, for most of these guys, now on 7, maybe 8 days of rest here. Fried and the Atlanta Braves, about $1.60 to $1.65 favorite on the road against Ranger Suarez and the Phils. Now, what do you expect in a matchup like this? Seeing 8s juiced over or 8.5s juiced under is our overnight total.
Yeah, you know, I would say as a general rule, when you're looking at guys coming off of these extended layoffs, and this one's really not that bad. It's almost like a rain out and an off day type thing. When I'm looking for those types of guys, I'm looking for guys that have control issues. You know, a guy like Dylan Cease, for example, who will walk some guys, wasn't terribly sharp, wasn't terribly efficient today. Shane Bieber doesn't really walk anybody. He just didn't have any command. But, you know, when I look for those guys coming off the layoff that kind of concern me, it'd be more of a Ranger Suarez in this game than it would be a Max Fried, because Suarez is a guy that, you know, just throughout the course of the season, not super efficient, goes four or five innings, faces a Braves team that's making a ton of hard contact here. Wouldn't really have any concerns about Fried, and apparently the market doesn't either, with this line kind of jumping up 10 to 15 cents already, and I don't think it's done moving.
I get it, and both of those pitchers each pitched on July the 16th, so equal amount of rest for them of over a week coming into this start. How about another matchup? We actually have three different matchups tomorrow, Adam, all of lefties on the mound. Taylor Rogers goes into Cincinnati for the Miami Marlins. Nick Lodolo, the young lefty there for Cincinnati, and I'm seeing the Reds overnight. They're about $1.18 to $1.20 favorite right now. Pretty impressive when you look at it that way, that the Reds are starting to get a little more market respect. And Trevor Rogers, the numbers have not been very good. I'm sure that's part of it, right? 5.46 ERA. Any belief that things will magically turn around this time for Rogers now going into a bandbox there in Cincinnati?
I think something that's really strange about Trevor Rogers and the numbers so far this year, and as you said, he hasn't been really good. Generally speaking, Marlins starters are really good in Miami. Trevor Rogers this year has a 7.08 ERA and 40 2/3 down at Lone Depot Park, 3.95 ERA on the road. He's got a 3.94 weighted on base average against at home, 3.10 on the road. But with that being said, his control numbers are awful away from home. 32 strikeouts against 24 walks. You cannot walk people when you're pitching in a great offensive park like that. It's the biggest thing that's a problem at Coors. You know, balls are going to find holes. Balls are going to find patches of grass in a ballpark like that. It's a spacious outfield to cover. You can't walk guys. It's the same thing in Cincinnati. You cannot walk people. And when you look at this game here, Rogers has the walk issues on the road. And also the Marlins have been one of, or at least bottom five, in terms of worst offenses against left-handed pitching throughout the course of the season. And they get one here in Nick Lodolo, who's been a lot more efficient, you know, ironed some things out in the minor leagues. I actually said to you during the break, do I have to actually take the Reds tomorrow? And I think fact that the Reds are favored and that this line's moving in their direction a little bit, I think it's a pretty telling line move and a pretty telling indicator.
Yeah, seeing it already up to $1.25 at DraftKings, you can still, as I was saying, find them in around the minus 118 to 120 range in the market. Totals, I'm seeing either nines juiced a little over or 9.5s already with some of those early movements there juiced to the under. Interesting series as well in Boston, where the Guardians, who, again, as we talked about earlier, I don't know if it's fair to say a disappointing split, but when you win the first two of a four-game set, certainly had their chances to win that series in Chicago. They split it. At least it wasn't what happened to Boston, who get outscored 40-10 over the three-game series sweep, the loss at home there to Toronto. You get Zach Plesac going for the Guardians, Nick Pivetta for Boston. Pretty much a pick'em I'm seeing in most markets. Adam, is there a side you lean here?
Well, it's quite a bit of respect for Zach Plesac, I think, because that's a guy that, you know, got off to a really bad start. He's pitched better over his last few outings. Also, keep in mind, Boston doesn't have Rafael Devers. I mean, they're missing an MVP caliber type player in that lineup, so that's a big issue for them. Nick Pivetta's last three starts, he's given up 20 runs, but he's faced the Rays and the Yankees twice, and those are two teams that see him a lot. His hard hit percentage this year is over 47%, but again, he's faced the Yankees quite a bit. He's faced Toronto, three or four times so far this year. He's faced the Yankees three times. The Guardians don't make a lot of contact quality. They just don't. Their hard hit rate's been low all year long. They got a low barrel rate as well. This may be a spot where Pivetta can pitch a little bit better. The concern that I have is Boston without Devers in the lineup. But at this point, with this game being kind of a money line pick'em toss-up type of game, I do lean towards Boston in this one just because, look, when you get rocked by the Yankees, that's one thing. But the Guardians lineup is not the New York Yankees lineup.
And we saw this earlier from Pivetta. It was actually a month ago to the day. Went to Cleveland, scattered. Like, he gave up some hits, but 9 hits in 7 innings, only allowed 2 runs, though, and was really efficient in general in that start. So did not walk a single batter in that game. Was pretty good with the command there. And, as you say, that's really in a pick'em range. You can find minus 105s out there pretty evenly in the market, as high as minus 115 on Boston in some other spots there. Total of 9, either juiced over or 9.5 at this point, juiced to the under. Any spots outside,
you know,
of the ones?
Yeah, we talked about this last week on the show, where the Red Sox have not won a single series against an AL East opponent so far this season. So they're just not matching up well within that division, but they're still in the playoff picture because of what they've done outside of the division. So they're going outside the division, taking on a Guardians team that I'm not super high on. So I may end up on Boston here.
Boston 3 back for that final wild card spot. Guardians 2 back entering play tomorrow there with the Seattle Mariners right now occupying that third and final spot after they were swept at the hands of Houston at home this weekend. Was just going to ask Adam, any other games aside the ones we mentioned so far you want to get some early thoughts out on that catch your eye here on the overnight window?
Well, let me kick this back at you because your team made an interesting move here today with a starter who's on the mound tomorrow night in Aaron Ashby. So yeah. The Milwaukee Brewers signed Aaron Ashby to a long-term deal. It was a 5-year deal for a guy that's been, you know, he's had flashes, certainly at the MLB level. He's also had some bad flashes as well. What do you think about him? And what do you think about, you know, maybe the potential pressures of, you know, signing this deal and then starting the next day?
So it's a very interesting angle. I mean, technically Saturday was the signing date. 5 years, $20.5 million. And look, they'll have club options here for 28 and 29. And I've had so much respect for David Stearns as a GM. The way they have embraced analytics, and it has paid off given that they are a smaller market, smaller payroll franchise in general. I do like the signing in general. The timing is a little bit odd, I will say, just because he's really struggled with command this year. But Ashby is a classic guy to me, Adam. I'm not suggesting that he's going to become the next Corbin Burns, but what we're seeing in his early career struggles, they really do mirror a lot what we're seeing with Burns. I mean, a guy who just cannot command the zone. His stuff moves so violently a lot of times that, like, he'll start a pitch right down the middle that ends up 6 inches inside, and it almost seems like his stuff is so good he hasn't really figured out how to control it yet. So Ashby's a guy I really do like long-term. I have no issues with the contract. I think it's a little bit overblown. Oh, if you sign a contract, all of a sudden you're starting, you're naturally going to feel nerves. Because the reality is, he really hasn't pitched that well all season. A lot of good metrics that are of a positive regression mindset for Ashby. 4.57 ERA, the expected ERA, xFIP, both below 3.50. But when you walk over 4 batters per 9, and you know you have a batting average on balls in play there of 3.39 as well, that's kind of how you end up with some of those gaps and discrepancies. I like him long term, but the command has got to be fixed. And I think they've made the investment, though. They're willing to see it through. I'm not sure I'd lay the dollar. I'm seeing what, $1.88, $1.90 overnight. That's a little rich for me to lay there against Kyle Freeland on the mound. That's probably one of those matchups I want no part of. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, the Rockies, you know, on the road, they're just not good, just scoring barely over 3 runs per game. Yeah. But they have been good against lefties, so we'll see what they do here. But I agree with everything you said. I think the Ashby gamble is a good one because you may get a lot of equity on that contract moving forward.
I would tend to agree. I hope it works out. So, anyway, that's neither here nor there. Adam, this has been a blast as always. Thank you for being a good sport doing this from Cleveland. We'll see you back. You're going to be in studio with Jeff Parles next week, so we can't wait for that. For Adam Burke, I'm Ben Wilson. Thanks to our producer as well, Jason Kahn, behind the glass as we say so long on this edition of The Run Line. Up next, it's The Look Ahead here with Greg Peterson on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.